Welcome. This is Tar Heel 24/7, a UNC basketball podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the channel. Without further ado, I want to welcome in Andrew Jones, lead reporter, boots on the ground. He's our field correspondent, essentially, for Carolina basketball, how I like to describe him. Let's get into it right away. UVA, let's skip past the first half. Halftime, what were your thoughts?
Well, I actually liked the way they closed the first half. Mm-hmm. And I think a difference, and I noted this in something I did the other day, actually I have a second half piece running on Tuesday on the site. At the end of the first half, last few minutes of the first half in Berkeley, from my vantage point, the body language was really bad. Mm-hmm. And it didn't look like there was any juice whatsoever. But in Charlottesville, the body language wasn't that bad, even when they were down 16. And I think that mentally, whatever hurdle, whatever stuff that was kind of holding them back a little bit on the West Coast wasn't there in Charlottesville. And you have Luka hitting a three, and Derek gets a switch, gets a big man on him. He gets a step back three, and they get a little 9-point spurt. Mm-hmm. And they go in, or a 7-point spurt, and they go in the locker room only down 9. And that may have been what brought about all the conversations. I think Seth and a couple of guys told us that a bunch of different players expressed their opinions and offered their voices at halftime. And what I found interesting, John, and being in the many different types of teams you've been on, you can probably see the importance of this. The four players he named, James Brown, who wasn't even in uniform Saturday. One of them was Kyan, who has lost his starting job. And overall, the four players he listed scored 7 points Saturday. And I think that resonated well with me, because one of the things I've been told from day one, and I have seen personally, is that this team has a really good connection. Like, they really enjoy each other, and they have good chemistry off the court, and they're building on the court. And that, to me, is one of those team chemistry moments where if Kyan is speaking up and James Brown is in street clothes and hasn't played in 3 weeks and he's speaking up, that means there's something good going on in that room. And the result is what we saw in the second half. So when you have that dynamic, from my vantage point of covering teams for a long time, and I'm sure yours playing on those teams, mm-hmm. different teams for a long time, when you have that, that's an extra layer that a lot of clubs don't have. And I think that's why we've seen this team kind of quickly turn things around as they have and ended up winning what is by far the best win they've had this season.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I watched the game and the first half, I was kind of down. But that run at the end, I think the guys calling the game were like, look, that was big, right? Like, get this thing under 10 and a little momentum. And, yeah, you just saw them come together. I mean, I think Stevenson and Luka, right, like, Luka kind of saved us. I don't think he didn't take the best threes, but those timely threes kind of kept the game from getting away from us. And then the second half, I mean, they come together, they defend. And we got to remember, this lineup is what, game three? You know, rotations are in game three. So I think they found something there. And even with Jaden Young, right, he didn't play a lot. Evans obviously didn't. But, I mean, these are two guys that could come in and impact the game at any point in time that could help kind of UNC win games. So I'm encouraged, because I don't want to call it a must win, but if Virginia comes here and blows the doors off us, the noise gets loud, per se.
And the players have been hearing the noise, John.
Yeah.
Is Seth, I don't know if you saw Seth's interview. It's kind of weird. Berkeley is a weird setup, and we end up having to talk to Seth outside next to the team bus. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to be talking to us. It was pretty obvious. And Seth's been really good, mm-hmm. and he will express himself if he's upset. But he almost wasn't even upset. It was just like, man, what can I say? And he mentioned about how the players hear everything. And I thought it was interesting that he and Caleb, after Virginia, both brought up Hubert. They weren't asked about Hubert. They brought him up. They hear what people are saying about Coach, and I think they felt some responsibility and an obligation because of that. But you're right about Luka, by the way. I'm glad you pointed that out. He kept them afloat in the first half.
Yep.
And those shots, look, they're Luka shots. You play with guys, sometimes you just got to live with some of the shots they take, mm-hmm. right? Because that's going to get them some of the buckets that they do make. And then Jaren only played 4 minutes in the first half. And one of the things I really like about Hubert, and I've seen growth this season from him, is he will kind of go with the guy that's playing well longer than he used to. And a perfect example is how many coaches would actually not put Henry back in the game. He had four fouls, but you could have put him back in with 5 minutes left and trusted a guy who's a potential first-round pick. But Hubert felt the game in a way that he thought, you know what, this is our lineup that's going to get us a win. As much as I love Henry, it's just not his day. It's Jaren's day, and I'm going to roll with Jaren. And I think that's growth in Hubert as a coach. And he allowed Jaren to kind of have that game, which I think could be huge. Who knows what it sparks in him? Maybe he's just an intermittent guy who contributes big in this game and then doesn't for a couple of games, then has another one. Whatever it is, he was stepped up and he gave him that win, helped get them to the winner's circle there. And Hubert allowing him to be who he was and stay in there was a real big development for me. And I think it's evidence of growth in Hubert as a coach. People can still criticize some things, but that to me is a huge thing, because I'm sure you've played for coaches who are like, hey, these are my guys and I'm running with them no matter what, when sometimes someone else is playing real well and that might be better fit for that particular game and sequence, and you should roll with them. So I think that's pretty encouraging for Carolina fans, the way Hubert handled the game, especially in the second half.
Yeah, I when I was watching the game, I was like, Luka's got some big cojones. He's not scared. Like, yeah. He's not scared. I you could call it what you want. Hey, bad shot, or hey, this, that, not. Like, he's not scared. And I can't do anything but respect it, because some cats would fold in that moment. And we needed that, right? Like, we needed someone to go out there, because I think Luka, by way of, doesn't know American basketball per se. Like, Virginia is one of the toughest places to play. I have nightmares of UVA. Like, I literally have nightmares, because we go up there, we're feeling good, and then we're in a 50-55 slugfest, like, you know, about to, you know, so.
They hate you guys. They hate you guys up there. Yeah, people don't understand how much Virginia hates Carolina.
And you know, driving to the, it's a nasty place, right? Like, it's not somewhere you just like, oh my God, I'm so excited to play. So to get a win there, I don't think people realize, not only come back from 16, like, that is a tough venue. And then with, you know, Coach Davis, right? He's just, his coaching journey has just started at the highest level. Yeah. So we can call it what we want, but he's still learning what works best for him and what he likes to do. And leaving the guys in that are playing well, this is a pro model game now, right? Pro model game. So you've got to kind of do what pro coaches do. Like, I remember when I was playing, if I was playing well, I'm sticking in there. If not, they're taking me out. It's not the old college basketball per se.
Well, you know, he's tried lineups.
Yeah.
He caught in Berkeley, he told us, well, this has been a bump. And I'm like, well, you don't have three starting lineups and different starting lineups in four games if you're in a bump. Yeah. And then it turned to be three games in a row. But yeah, it may have been a bump. And it ends up that he could be actually correct about that. But give him credit for trying different lineups. I mean, he's tried it. If you think about it now, the other day, Evans, Bogovats, and Stevenson were on the bench when the game started, and they were starters a month ago. So he's willing to move and adapt and try things, I think, more so than he had been before. And you're right, it's just his fifth year. Yeah. It's different when you're the head coach, especially when you're head coach of that program with that brand and the kind of attention that it gets. You could say he's used to it because he played there and was an assistant there, but there's no substitute for being a head coach, and he's learning on the curve. There are things to criticize, absolutely, but Carolina fans who are so anti-Hubert have got to pull back and take a look at the full picture, because there are some positive things about what he's done, and for he sure. might be the right kind of voice for this group. This is a different kind of team. This is one of the, it's a nice team. There's a lot of articulate kids. There's a lot of respectful kids. I'm not saying past ones didn't have that. They just have more quiet kids. This is a more talkative team. Last year's team was, Hubert said it was the quietest, most silent team he'd ever been around. And that's usually not a good thing. This club talks through stuff, going back to what Seth said about halftime with all the different voices in that room. Mm-hmm. I think that's healthy. I don't think it's an issue where you have too many chefs in the kitchen. I don't think you can ever have too many guys talking it up and trying to encourage one another on a basketball team. If everybody guy on the roster does it, I think that's a positive.
Best teams I've ever been on communication is key. And you have to be okay with saying, hey, look, you suck this half. Like, get better. Like, hey, look, I'm open. Like, I'll never forget it. Funny side story. This is kind of how my team was, and we were pretty good. Kendall calls a play. I say, hey, man, like, what? Like, I don't like that call. You know, he's like, shut up. I called a play and run it. And I kind of took me back, but like, you're the leader, you're the head of the team, you're the, that's your play. I need to run the play that you call. So things like that aren't the worst thing in the world. You know, Kendall's still one of my closest friends. I'm going to be in his wedding. So, like, you know, it can build. Communication can build, and I can see that happening. So,
you guys did talk a lot. You guys talked through some tough stuff, too, if I recall.
Yeah.
I remember being in the locker room a few times after some tough performances, and you guys were pretty open about it. And that's one thing that was so healthy about that team. And that's why you guys were able to overcome that Florida State game and so on, because you were able to communicate. I thought that was one – not to mention the fact you had a bunch of first-round picks on the roster. I thought that was one of your strengths.
Yeah. We weren't scared to, you know, call each other out, but in a positive way, because at the end of the day, the goal, you know, the goal is to win. And don't take it personal. Like, it's the goal is to win. I could care less about how you feel about your personal. If you like, nah, like, hey, look, play better, we win. Winners get the awards, rewards, we get drafted. Like, it's all relative. So let's go, Jaren Stevenson, the kind of breakout. Do you like kind of where he's at right now? Hey, look, come in off the bench as kind of the third big. Because I remember going back to preseason, Coach Pannone, who's the coach of Arkansas State, was an assistant at Alabama. He said he was the most talented player on the team, not even close. Just getting it out of him was the issue. So tell me, what do you think about his breakout game? Is he going to continue on that path?
I could see that. He's kind of a reserve guy.
Yep.
And when you're around him, you're not thinking that you're talking to like Joe Athlete. We kind of joke. I'll let you in on this. We kind of joke in the media. He kind of reminds us of someone that 15 years from now, would you be surprised if he's like an elementary school principal? Yeah. He kind of has that demeanor about him and that super nice guy about him. But I thought that there was an edge that came out the other day. And I don't know what sparked it other than, you know, sometimes a ball goes to the basket and it elevates your game. But I also thought it was the way he was defended. That baseline cut and dunk he had was the most emphatic play he's made this year. And I asked him afterward, I said, did that kind of give you, you know, add to your aggressiveness, give you some juice? And he's not one that kind of runs with it. Some guys run with it when you ask him a question, some don't. He's still reserved in his responses, but you could tell with the smile on his face and the way he was reacting when you're asking him the question, that was definitely a moment. And I think that led to the drawn charge. I think the drawn charge on DeRitter late in the game is Jaren's moment. That's his moment. Okay, you're asked to play some 4 and 5, not as much on the 3. You got to be tough. You have to be consistently physical when you're down there. And that was a physical move against a big guy, their best player. And then he follows it up on the next possession with a 3. That's the best sequence of basketball he's probably ever played in his life. And he did it at the absolute most important time. But I think he got to that moment because of what he did earlier in the half. And he kind of let himself free. He played free, played loose. He played physically. He actually was animated after that dunk at a couple of plays. You could see him not so much flex, but almost like he was going to flex. Mm-hmm. He's not one of those flexing guys, but it almost came out. And it was a joy to see because he's definitely someone who's very easy to root for. His story is good. I could see what that coach was saying. I bet you probably for Hubert and the staff, they trying to find different ways to sort of spark some of that stuff to come out. And in the end, as you well know, it has to happen naturally. And when it happens naturally, it's the best way for it to happen. And maybe it carries. If they have found someone that can consistently provide for them the way he did the other day, at least to a degree of what he did the other day on a regular basis, that doesn't give them just two good frontline players. It gives them a third. And Hubert can kind of trust sitting Henry a little bit more and sitting Caleb a little bit more. And so they're more rested and fresher later in big games. And they got a lot of big ones coming up. They still have 6 quad one games left. So they're going to need Jaren to produce moving forward.
Yeah. You know, I can relate to that, like, persona of, like, kind of, you know, nice guy, you know, everyone's, you know, good guy to talk to. And then on the court, you know, you've got to be able to flip that switch. I had it in me to where, you know, I think I got the most, it's funny because I got the most texts, I think, on the team when I was there. So I found a way to flip the switch, but my teammates sometimes would, you know, they poke me a little bit. I don't know, maybe if we need to do have someone over there kind of being an antagonizer and poking him a little bit to piss him off. Because when he played with the edge, as we saw, like, I mean, it kind of changed the dynamic of our team because, oh, now we can go small, right? We can have Wilson. Like, if that lineup could be effective with the guard play and then, you know, Vesar comes in as well, like, I don't want to get too excited, but that could unlock something, you know, within this team down the stretch.
I like three perimeter players that are kind of sculpted like perimeter players because Jaren doesn't really drive well from the wing and he hasn't shot consistently well. So that's made it tougher to run a lot of the stuff. And then you put Kyan out there and he struggled shooting and he's not really a driver. The thing I really like about Derek, and he did it a few times the other day, and he reminds me a little bit of Kendall. Some of the mannerisms, by the way.
Yes.
But he's a physical driver. He's not Ty Lawson. He's not going to dart to the rim. But he's a physical driver. And a couple times he got the defender on his hip. He's able to get stuff up. And when you have that from your point guard and someone who can also shoot the three, it makes it tougher for teams to double on the other guys. And if we see that moving forward and Caleb faces fewer doubles, because you have to still guard the lane, you have to, someone has to help out on that drive, I think that that takes this team up a notch offensively. I like what Derek has done. And he looks like a more comfortable player and relaxed player since Hubert put him in the starting lineup. Previously, when he was coming off the bench, I'm sure you noticed this, but every once in a while, he'd pick up the ball real far from the basket and the offensive set would just stagnate. I haven't seen him do that the last two games. So he's playing freer and looser, and probably with a ton more confidence. So I would expect we're going to see more stuff come out from him. And when he's out there and you got Seth out there and whoever else you want as the other perimeter player, be it Jonathan or Luca or even Jaden, who's got a nice stroke, boy, that really gives them a lot of offensive options. And I also think it makes them better in transition, which they had 21 transition points the other day. That's Carolina basketball, man. The bigs running the court. Jaren ran the court once. Caleb ran the court. Derek with the pitch ahead. That's Carolina basketball. And we saw a lot of that the other day. And I kind of like the smaller perimeter lineup, personally.
Yeah, his demeanor kind of, and then the size, it does kind of eerily remind you of Kendall. And
from the same area, too.
Yeah, he's settling in. I was trying to, like, look back at my notes on Derek, and I said Impact's winning. Right. Like little things like the fearless. Right. Like, so those things are kind of coming to fruition. And it was a good move by Coach Davis. Tough one because I just know how hard it is midseason to make a lineup. We went through it with Kendall.
You went through it. And that's the comparison.
Yeah.
That's the comparison that people are coming up with. Yeah. And, you know, Roy, I've tried to explain this to people and you can do a much better job of this to me because you lived it. But Roy probably knew that move needed to be made before he made it, but you have to do it the right time for the room because everybody in the room has to know that room, that move has to be made as well. And I thought that Hubert probably wanted to do this sooner, but sometimes you have to do it when it's so obvious that everybody understands it, everybody moves on and accepts it, and there's really no speed bump in dealing with it. That's the way I kind of look at how this was made. And that reminds me of when Roy finally went to Kendall.
Yeah, I remember that moment, and you know, Roy is fiercely loyal. He's fiercely loyal to his guys, to what he promised you when he's in, when you're in his house. And so, you know, for him to make a lineup change, even more so to Coach Davis, it was just like kind of taking it back because even my freshman year when we went to the NIT, he refused kind of to make those changes for the seniors that had came in. They had won a championship. He said, nah, like I'm rocking with my guys and that's it. So to make that change midseason, it was eye opening, but you know, that's what he had to do. He was forced to do it essentially. Because one thing Coach doesn't play about is turnovers. So, you know, he could deal with a lot, but no turnovers. So that was our issue. So it is kind of some parallels in that situation. We'll see if they take off because what happened with us, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx them, but we won the ACC regular season championship that year. I think we rattled off like 13 out of 14 or something when Kendall started playing. So hopefully that happens. Let's hope that.
And if Leslie doesn't pick up a couple of cheap fouls against Kentucky, you never know.
Right. Or if, hey, look, if Coach Kyle doesn't tell DeAndre Liggins, if you ever do that again, you'll never play for me in your life. Like, hey, who knows, right? If he shot that thing with his eyes closed, I'm telling you right now, I was out there. He shot it with his eyes closed. He was like, I got to shoot it, and he made it. So good times. So let's move on to Georgia Tech, upcoming slate. UNC has run 3 in a row against GT at home, but lost 2 out of 3 in ATL. Another spot that I don't know why we struggled down there in Georgia. We had a couple tough games. I'll never forget what the game we lost. They had Amon Shumpert and Derek Favors, so they weren't bad.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
But so kind of, is this a get right situation for them? You know, GT and Syracuse coming up, or how do you feel about this coming up? Two games.
I think right now with some of the changes that Hubert's made, it's just sort of let's see what they are in the next game. I don't even know. I guess we can qualify it afterward, depending on how they handle it. This reminds me a little bit of the West Coast. McCamish is going to be full. I was talking to someone at Georgia Tech this morning. It's going to be full. If it's not sold out, it will be sold out. It's kind of a strange arena. It's more of a theater type atmosphere in that the lights are out and the court's really bright. It's different than a lot of other ACC venues. You know, the 17 team, I flew up that morning. They played there on New Year's Eve, and they had a noon game on New Year's Eve, and they just weren't ready to go, and they were terrible. And they lost to a bad Georgia Tech team, and Roy just his head was going to explode, I thought. And that team ended up winning a national title. 2 years ago, they're 10-0. They go there. Dongo gets in foul trouble, whatever it was, early, and they still can't beat Georgia Tech. I think RG ended up having to go for like 30 just to keep them in the game. They still couldn't overcome them. So I think part of it is it's kind of a strange atmosphere at times. It's not as raucous as back when you went there because they've kind of gotten apathetic toward basketball at Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. And if it's going to be close to full, that means half the crowd's going to be Carolina fans. There's a ton of Carolina fans down there.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't think this is a very good Georgia Tech team, but they have a couple solid players, and they've gotten Carolina before. They did win at NC State this past week. So the Tar Heels, I think the test for me going in is to see how ready to go they are. Are they just kind of sluggish in the first half? Do we see more of that again and they have to get a fire lit under their rear ends in order to get a win? Or do they come out and just take care of business? I think the way that they've kind of layered the last three games, really, if you go back to second half at Cal, which I think is where the sense of urgency, they sort of understood the importance of that a little bit more. And then the last two games with Derek in his second and third game as a starter and the way they played Saturday at UVA, they really need to kind of piggyback on that in this game. They need to go in there, take care of business, play really well. Got a quick turnaround for Syracuse, so there's a challenge having to play 2 days later back at home. And then you got Duke coming up, and you obviously know what that means and all the different aspects of them that will be tested going into that. They'll certainly be ready for that game. I think the next two are all about their minds going into games. And if their minds are right, they're going to have no trouble winning both those games. And certainly, even if Georgia Tech plays well, they're going to go in there and win if they're ready to play and they don't do silly stuff or don't get any ridiculous foul trouble early or anything like that. So that's what I expect. And that's what I'll probably gauge them on the performance.
Yeah, thank God we got Duke at home first.
Tell you I agree with that.
Yeah, so
they look good right now.
They look really good. Georgia Tech, tough. I mean, these are two teams that can beat anybody in this league on any given night. That's the thing that scares me. I don't know if they watch as much basketball as me and you, but hopefully they watch and film and understanding that Georgia Tech is talented enough to beat you.
Oh, yeah.
And at their places, and in Syracuse, they're the team that I watch throughout the year, you know, before the conference schedule. I mean, listen, you let them get rolling, they'll get you out of there too. So
yeah, they got some talent too. Yep. Both those teams have guys that would play in Carolina's rotation without a doubt.
Yep.
And Georgia Tech's got a couple older guys too. So being at home, Stoudemire got him 2 years ago down there, so you never know. And maybe he's coaching for his job and the kids sense it. Desperation type of game. College basketball is crazy that way. So they're going to have to be ready to play. But if they are, I don't think that they'll lose unless they're just like 2 for 30 from the perimeter, which they've actually shot 37.8% from three in the last eight games. So they may have found, they've been pretty consistent with the shooting from the perimeter. So they may have found their stroke out there.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm a little nervous because you know, the letdown spot is real. You win a big time game in Virginia, and you kind of relax a little bit because you see Georgia Tech on the schedule. I've done it before. It doesn't turn out well. So
that's the test. That's
the test. Definitely. And you know, I think the best teams know how to handle prosperity. When things are going well, they win games that they're supposed to win. I think that the West Coast trip was a kind of a microcosm of that. Hey, look, 14-2, best start since the 09 team. We roll in, and then you get knocked off the ledge. So hopefully that's over with. They understand what could happen in this tournament play and in this ACC, because there's a lot of new guys that haven't played in ACC.
Yeah.
That matters. Let's go brief chat on the Dean Dome. Now, I know this is a hot topic. I mean, this is big time stuff here, like going on some back and forth pulling behind the scenes. Talk to me about it. How do you feel? What's your thought on it?
I'm impressed. I mean, I've covered this program for, this is my 30th year being around the program. I mean, I was around you your whole career and stuff, and I totally understand what this program is about and what it means to people. I've got family members who cry when Carolina loses, probably still. And the emotion.
I cry until them. Don't worry. Me and we can all cry together.
The emotional component that erupted after Roy's video and then Tyler's video came out last week was, it even surprised me. As well as I think I have a feel for the program and the fan base with this program, that surprised me a little bit, because I thought a lot of people were kind of resigning themselves to the idea that there'll be a new building. And then that comes out. And I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me on various different platforms saying that changed their mind. They can't go to anywhere new. They have to stay in the Dean Dome. They got to figure it out. And I get that. And I'm kind of like, I'm not on either side of this. I totally understand both sides. And I think both sides make a lot of sense. And why I kind of like the emotional got to stay in the Dean Dome, that side of the discussion, is because I've been to a lot of different places. With Carolina winning its 500th game at home, I did some thing where I went and decided to add up all the different places I've covered. I've covered Carolina basketball games. I've done it in 76 different arenas. Okay. And overall, I've covered games in 86 different arenas in my career. So I've seen a lot of stuff, and nothing is like the Dean Dome. You've been to probably as many or more arenas than I have. And there is nothing like the Dean Dome in terms of the structure. It's like a massive old bandbox type arena at this point. It does get, it's very loud when it gets loud. It's not always loud. Obviously you can hear the sneakers sitting up where we sit sometimes, but when it gets loud, John, it is loud, and it's a great facility. And it's just got so much cool history that I'd be fine if they figured out a way to get the seat license people out of the conversation, buy them out, tell them, hey, we're going to go to a new building. Some of you guys won't even get tickets. You're going to be sitting upstairs. You won't be close anymore. You won't be able to show off to all your buddies or anything like that. And maybe they can buy them out. That's one thing that someone actually brought up a couple weeks ago or last week to me that I thought, hey, that's a great idea. I'll go ahead and throw it out there. Obviously, no one's listening to what I say, but that would be kind of neat if they could keep it. But on the other hand, with the direction college athletics are going and the fact that Carolina North is going to happen, and it will be a significant part of campus in 10 years from now, I understand that idea too. They're going to be able to make a lot more money. They don't make money off all 21,750 seats right now. They would like to have something 16,000-17,000 seats where they make a lot of money off each ticket, and they could bring in a lot of other things that they can make revenue from, because Carolina is Carolina. It's got a great brand, but the brand value isn't what it was 10 or 15 years ago when you ranked nationally. Mm-hmm. It's been passed by some programs that would surprise people. So it's great to sit in the past, but it makes a lot of sense to move forward. Because in the end, if they're hanging banners in the new building, is anybody going to care? Is anybody going to say, boy, I really wish they would hang that in the Dean Dome instead? I think that ultimately, Carolina winning, the uniforms are going to be what they are. The fight song is going to be what it is. The Block NC is going to be the Block NC. In fact, they're embracing it more now because of what the university recently decided. So I think in the end, people will be okay with it. But I get the emotion. I can sort of share the emotion in the sense that that's where I've come. I've gone in there 1,000 times for press conferences and games. And for you as a former player, I totally get that. But at the same time, I get the idea of moving forward too. So I'm good with either thing that they do. It'll be a little bit closer the drive, Carolina North, maybe less traffic. Yeah. Maybe they'll build a couple of roads that make it easy to get in and out because Dean Dome can be tough at times. But I think it's a cool discussion because it really illustrates how much people care about this program and embrace the history of this program because it's very unique. Very unique. I would argue that right there with Kansas and maybe more so in Kentucky, it's the greatest program in college basketball history. And so much of it occurred in that building. And it's not going to go away. The building will always be a part of the history, just like people still reminisce about Woolen. They were 57.
Carmichael.
Exactly. Yeah. And it helps that the women still play there, but it doesn't look anything now like it did back in the day.
Yeah.
So, and you actually played a game in Carmichael.
I played William & Mary there. It was fun.
NIT game. Yeah. That's wild. So I don't know. I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I totally get it. It would be great if it could work out at the Dean Dome, but I understand moving forward and maybe we'll get better seats in the media in the new building. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously there was a long call with all the players, former UNC coaches and stuff with the chancellor. I mean, it was a long call and, you know, not to say too much about it, but it's more so of a money thing than anything. I think that everyone would love to stay at the Dean Dome, but you know, not getting too deep into it, but the cost of renovating versus a new stadium, I think is that's the issue, right? Where do we go? Do we renovate? Hey, do we say, look, let's pour all this money into this stadium, but we can get maybe a brand new stadium that could be monetized a lot more.
Yeah.
Right. For essentially just 50% more. Right.
And you know, the other thing, and I would love your opinion on this. Yep. I know this is your show, but I'm asking you a question.
Oh, yeah, you're good. You're good. This is like, we're doing this together.
If they renovate, mm-hmm. where do they play? To me, the Carolina basketball experience,
they would have
cannot to be had playing a home game in Greensboro.
They would be off site for 2 years.
Yeah, and they can't play in Raleigh. Obviously, they're not going to play in Carmichael. It cannot.
I mean, they might have to shift over there for a year. Maybe, you know, like I don't, you know, I think, I mean, I played in Carmichael. Like, yeah, you know, you're not going to get that environment. But let me tell you something. Playing at Carmichael might be, I mean, it's kind of like so the Rays here when the hurricane happened.
Yeah.
The Rays blew the thing off the dome. They couldn't do it. So the Rays are played in the Yankees AAA stadium.
Yeah.
And it's actually been a little more fun to watch go to Rays games just because it's kind of like it's less people. It's more of a – so I don't know. I don't know where they would play at, but I'm assuming Carmichael would be on a short list, maybe.
I've been told that Carmichael wouldn't be able to handle a men's basketball game.
Yeah.
There's too many things that go into it. So that's why it really wouldn't be an option. Unfortunately, Raleigh wouldn't be an option. Although – if NC State had an on-campus facility it played in, which it should, by the way, build a new Reynolds Coliseum, please.
Yep.
And they played there, and it was just the Hurricanes building. That would probably work enough because there's a ton of Carolina fans here. But this way, they'll play if they go Carolina North, which I think is what the lean is, they'll play there. That place will be ready to open up. They'll have the last game in the Dean Dome, and boom, they shift over the next season to the new building. I think it would be really, really challenging for Carolina basketball to play off campus. I talked to Brad Brownell at Clemson. They had to spend a year in Greenville playing at Bond Secures Arena, which is quite away from campus. They played a whole season there, lost a lot of close games because they didn't have the right crowd and environment and stuff, and Brad said it was terrible. He couldn't recruit guys to get there, and this is Clemson.
Yeah.
Imagine if you're trying to recruit guys to come play at North Carolina, but hey, we're going to play in the Greensboro Coliseum for a year.
Yeah. With the NIL, they're like, hey, wait, I don't get to play in, you know.
I don't want to bust an hour to a home game.
I'm kind of like you. I'm indifferent. Like, if whoever the powers that be, whatever they decide, I'm going to be supportive of. Obviously, Coach Williams and T. Hands come out and they say they want to keep the Dean Dome. I will say, look, from all the things I've heard, as long as they fix those bathrooms in there, right? You know, as long as they fix those bathrooms, those troughs, like, you know, 1980 troughs that, you know, Michael Jordan was using, right? Like when he was there, I think everyone would be fine. But I think I see the older generation, the nostalgia, they want to keep the Dean Dome. And then the younger, maybe money kind of people at the school, like, look, we could, and you know, there's cool things they're trying to do with the new stadium. I mean, like, it's I wish I could speak more on it, but I'll tell you off camera. But like,
yeah,
there's so many cool things that they're trying to do with it as well. And I think if the public knew what it could become,
personally,
yeah, it would be a little more, you know, accepted. But tough decision, above my pay grade. I support whatever. I love the Dean Dome. Don't get it twisted, but you know, as you said, Carolina is a brand. When I was in school, we were the number one earning, I think, school. I think we saw the Forbes list. I think us in Louisville. So, hey, listen.
It's money not there is, now.
Yeah, it's not there now. You know, it's something to be looked at. I don't envy the people making that decision because somebody's going to really be pissed off. But I think either way, you know, with what's coming, you know, even if the renovations, I mean, I think the renovations are going to be amazing if they do keep it. And if the new stadium, I mean, listen, I'm a young guy. That would be awesome too, to see a new stadium, new arena, but we'll see what happens. The powers that be, they're talking about it every day. Like I said, the thing that I love is that the administrations are bringing in all the players. You can call the chancellor, you can call the AD, you can give your opinion, can go to the meetings. So I love that aspect of it, and hopefully it gets worked out. I don't envy anyone in that position.
And one thing you know for sure, that if they stay in the Dean Dome, what an amazing place to play for however many years. But you know, if they build something new, it's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's going to have a lot of history in there, and you're going to walk in there, and you're not going to think, well, this is just any other arena you walk in. You don't know if you're in Milwaukee or in Denver. You're going to walk in there, and you're going to know you're in Chapel Hill. There's 100%. They'll do it the right way, and they'll do it respecting and honoring the history of the program. There's no doubt about it. So I think in the end, if that's the way they go, people after a couple of years are really going to like it. They're going to be fine with it.
And you know, I'll give a little tidbit. You know, I don't know. I've heard maybe, you know, obviously it's in a preliminary. But, you know, if you're listening to the pod, you get some inside info. I heard that the new arena could potentially be like a Jordan arena. Right.
Yeah.
Big Jordan on the, you know, like, so that's what I heard. I don't know. I just heard through the grapevines, through the Carol, you know, message boards on Tar Heel 24/7. That's what someone was saying. I don't know. It's like, so yeah, it doesn't, you know, right now it doesn't sound great, but can you imagine, like,
you and I have been talking to the same people, man.
Exactly. you know what I'm saying? So, that's just a little, you know, tidbit. I think it'll be cool for sure. And people don't understand what they're going to become, but I don't know, man. It's a tough decision.
Are you thinking big Jordan brand logo on top of the building?
I think maybe that's what I was hearing. But you know, you got to go to the boards. You got to subscribe. You know, go on the boards. You could probably get all that information on target247.com. So shameless drop, shameless plug. but look, thank you so much, man. Love chatting with you, man.
Absolutely.
Love, safe travels to Atlanta as well. And I appreciate it.
Are you going to be there?
No, I won't be there. I got to go. I did a Syracuse game. So.
Oh, okay. That's right. Okay, yeah. Yeah, all right. I saw you in Atlanta last time, which was
pretty cool.
And Justin Watts. I hadn't seen Justin Watts since he was in uniform.
That's my roommate, man. That's one of my best friends. So, man.
That's good stuff.
Guys. So, all right. Appreciate as always, thanks for watching on YouTube and listening to wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to check out TarHeel247.com, wherever you get your podcast, anything like that, Apple, we're on that, YouTube, and see you next time.